For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everybody, today we are debating whether or not God exists, and we are starting right now. Ladies and gentlemen, thrilled to have you here, very, very excited for this epic debate. This is, honestly, I can't express how thrilled I am. My friend Steven, he called me before, he said, you can't host this, the internet is going to implode, James, you can't host it. He said, I'm afraid. I said, Steven, it's a risk we have to take. We will cross that bridge when we get there. It's worth it for this. This is how special it is. So we have two titans of debate. These guys are superb. You've seen them before, I'm sure. This is going to be a lot of fun, folks. They are both linked in the description. So that way, if you're listening, you're like, oh, snap. These debaters, they've got some mean game. You can check out more at those links below. So with that, one also, if this is your first time here, consider hitting that subscribe button, as we have a lot of upcoming debates, including Arun Ra and Dr. Fuzz Rana will be here tomorrow to debate if biology points to God. That will be an exciting one, and many others to come. So don't forget to hit that notification bell if you'd like those reminders. And with that, want to just mention, this is going to be a kind of formal/informal, where we have 12-minute opening statements, and debaters can use as much or as little of that as they'd like, and then we'll have an 8-minute rebuttal, followed by 40 minutes of open discussion, and then we'll have Q&A for about 25 minutes. So, it's going to be a great time, and we will have Michael starting first, as he's taking the affirmative on whether or not God exists. So, glad to have you here, gentlemen. This is always fun. And I want to mention, too, that more importantly, these guys are not only superb debaters, very personable. They have not let their success go to their head. They're very real. So I really appreciate having you guys on. Thanks for being here, both of you. You betcha. So with that, Mike, I am pulling up the timer. No problem. It should be a green button with an arrow pointing up, and it's, okay, let's see here. Then, it may be, I'm trying to think of an alternate format. We'll find it. No problem. Zoom out. Yeah, no problem. Gotcha. Let me pull that up. So, we are just looking for it looks like Zoom did an update, so we're looking for where the share screen button is. We'll be right there.
I gotta update stuff and it always ruins it.
So, we are in the process. Let's see.
Oh my
Nope, I see two. All right,
it's back now. I just restarted it. I'm back. So, all right, I'm ready to share my screen.
Wait, I think we need to kick out the other because I see him twice.
I do see two of you, Michael. It's almost as if there are. As if you're oh no, it went away. Okay. So thanks for your
yeah. I just had to restart Zoom. So all right, I'll share a screen now.
You bet. I got it up.
All right, I'm going to start my timer here. Give me 1 second here to get this kind of going. Okay, I'm going to hit start here. Okay, well, all right, I'm happy to have this conversation today, and thank you, Stephen, for agreeing to discuss this. Diving right in, I myself am a classical apologist, so that means I'll be arguing a theistic or deistic worldview is more probable given the evidence. So I don't claim I can prove God exists, and I won't be arguing specifically for Christian theism tonight. I'll be arguing for basic theism or deism, and I'll present 2 to 3 arguments that God exists. So the first argument I want to present is the digital physics argument. Let's begin with the data. In several of my videos, I've presented various lines of evidence that space-time is emergent, not fundamental. In the hunt to rectify quantum mechanics with relativity, physicists discovered something known as the holographic principle. This is a theory which suggests the entire three-dimensional universe can be seen as two-dimensional information. In other words, basically, the whole three-dimensional universe, the particles that make up reality, would emerge from underlying information in quantum field theory. Then in 2017, a peer-reviewed study published observable evidence for the holographic principle. So from looking at irregularities in the background radiation, their team found that simple equations of quantum field theory can explain almost all cosmological observations, is a marginally better fit than the standard model, and potentially explain apparent anomalies. So this line of evidence suggests the universe, space-time, is not fundamental but emergent. Also, the emergent features of space-time can be seen elsewhere. A study from later that same year argued quantum entanglement is an inevitable feature of reality. To quote directly, they say, "We show that any theory with a classical limit must contain entangled states, thus establishing entanglement as an inevitable feature of any theory superseding classical theory." Strengthening this, another study from this year, 2019, found evidence of non-locality even when two particles were not directly entangled. So there was still non-locality even without direct entanglement. Okay, so thus, the information between two particles doesn't seem to be affected by space, as it can be transferred instantly. So building on Sean Carroll, this implies space is not fundamental but for the underlying world of quantum mechanics, but an emergent phenomenon of the classical world that only exists after measurement. So the evidence implies all of space-time is emergent. I can argue the emergent nature of matter, space-time from numerous areas, be it quantum mechanics, the holographic principle, Brian Whitworth's features of a virtual reality, or in many other ways. But the idea of space-time as emergent is not and not fundamental, is accepted more and more by physicists every day. So physicist Hyun Suk Yang says, emergent space-time is a new fundamental paradigm for quantum gravity. Thus, the most up-to-date evidence suggests all of what we experience, space, time, and matter, all seem to be emergent constructs of the classical world, not fundamental aspects of reality. But now the question becomes, what is space-time emergent from, and how does this relate to God's existence? Well, essentially, the classical world would emerge from the underlying information or wave function of the quantum realm. However, interestingly enough, the same underlying features have been seen to parallel aspects of the mind or conscious thought processes. In 2009, physicist Diedrich Ertz took this one step further and published a paper noting that our cognitive processes can be readily modeled using the mathematical formalism of quantum mechanics. So, in other words, our inner mental world of thought, quality, emotions can be modeled in terms of Hilbert space and quantum processes, the same processes that give rise to space, time, and matter. So space, time, and matter are emergent from quantum wave function in Hilbert space, and the inner world of consciousness and mind can be modeled via quantum processes in the study of quantum cognition. So this would suggest the evidence implies space-time is emergent, or implies that emergent space-time would be similar or indistinguishable from the same properties of a mind. So the simplest explanation is the universe is just emergent from a mind. If what the universe emerges from resembles a mind, it is far more parsimonious to accept that the universe would emerge from mind that we just call God. This is also backed by the recent work of astrophysicist Franco Vaza and neurosurgeon Alberto Felitti, who wrote an article on the similarities between neural networks and the cosmic web of galaxies. There they show that the properties of neural networks are similar to the cosmic web of galaxies, something we would expect if the universe is emerging from a mind. So basically, here is a formal representation of the digital physics argument. To save time, I won't explain the formal syllogism, but that should be enough starting evidence to suggest our classical universe has emerged from mind. I can come back to this if Stephen wants.
Wait, let me take a picture of this real quick. Sorry. Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah. So the next argument I want to present is the cosmic conscious argument. This is named for Eugene Wigner's work. Are you done?
Yep, I got it.
Okay. This is a cosmic conscious argument. So premise one, contingent minds either have a personal explanation or a natural explanation. This is not too controversial. Almost all theories of mind either hold to reductionist views or believe consciousness is irreducible as it is and would have to come from a fundamental conscious source. Premise two, quantum mechanics and other fields of science imply the natural universe is emergent from information processing and consciousness. This is the most controversial premise, I'd say. I've argued this more extensively in my videos, but essentially numerous experiments in quantum mechanics suggest consciousness plays an important role in wave function collapse and the appearance of material reality. We can get more into this during the discussion section, but essentially experiments such as interaction-free experiments, delayed choice quantum eraser experiments, the violation of the Leggett inequality, and the confirmation of the Cochin-Spector theorem lead to the inference consciousness causes collapse. Here's an interesting study from just this year. Without getting into too much detail, they argue this result lends considerable strength to interpretations of quantum theory already set in an observer-dependent framework and demands for revisions of those which are not. So the evidence implies the observer does play a role in quantum processes. The number one objection, of course, is that interaction or decoherence alone is enough to explain wave function collapse, that an observer is just something that physically interacts with the system. But this is a popular misconception. As one physicist says, does decoherence solve the measurement problem? Clearly not. What decoherence tells us is that certain objects feel classical when they are observed. But what is an observation? At some stage, we still have to apply the usual probability rules of quantum theory. Maximilian Schlauhauser says, decoherence arises from a direct application of the quantum mechanical formalism to a description of the interaction of a physical system with its environment. By itself, decoherence is neither an interpretation nor a modification of quantum mechanics. And of course, we have observed collapse in experiments without interaction taking place. Thus, as physicists like John von Neumann, Henry Stapp, Fred Kuttner, Bruce Rosenbluth, Bernard Hausch, Richard Conn-Henry, Stephen Barr, Ian Squires, etc., all argue this philosophically leads to the conclusion consciousness ultimately causes collapse. So this is coming from actual physicists. I just want to point that out. So it follows the appearance of material reality is emergent from consciousness, not the other way around. So conclusion one, the natural universe cannot be the explanation of contingent minds, since material reality emerges from consciousness. The explanation of the universe, the explanation of the existence of conscious minds is personal. This personal source is what we call or title God, therefore God exists. So unless someone can demonstrate consciousness is emergent from the brain, and trust me, I'm willing to go over several studies in the field of neuroscience, the most likely explanation is consciousness is irreducible, and thus contingent minds like ourselves would most likely be contingent on a larger consciousness that controls reality and brings other contingent minds into existence, and this is what we call God. Third and finally, I'll present the same line of reasoning via basic philosophy through something called the introspective argument. So premise one, the mind exists. No one with a mind can doubt this, not really controversial. Premise two, the properties of the mind are not that which matter can have. So there's been no evidence or theory which can show how consciousness or mental properties can reduce to matter. John Sear says, how does a mental reality, a world of consciousness, intentionality, and other mental phenomena fit into a world consisting entirely of physical particles and fields of force? Colin McGuinn says, the problem with materialism is that it tries to construct the mind out of properties that refuse to add up to mentality. So there is simply no evidence consciousness can emerge from matter. All neuroscience can show at best is a correlation, not causation. However, the properties of matter we experience can easily be reduced to mind, since all of what we experience is a mental world of qualia, sounds, tastes. We essentially experience a mental reality, so there's no reason to posit a discrete material world beyond what we experience, and yes, this would be idealism. Keith Ward says it like this. Any physicist will say that brains are mostly empty space, in which molecules, atoms, electrons, quarks, and other strange particles buzz about in complicated ways. It seems as though physical objects, when not being observed, have no colors and no sounds, smells, or tastes either. Sounds, like colors, are not physical events. Neither are smells, tastes, or sensations. Things do not smell like, taste like, or feel like anything when nobody is smelling, tasting, or feeling them. The physical world, it seems, is totally vacuous. No color, sound, smells, taste, or sensations. What on earth is left? This idea can also be explained via David Hume's bundle theory, which I can elaborate more on later. Interestingly enough, two neuroscientists also recently argued the space and rate of time we experience are also emergent features of the mind, again, correlating with an idealistic worldview. Thus, our first conclusion is mind is not reducible to matter. Premise three, substance dualism is unnecessary. I would argue from Spinoza's interaction problem, but I'm pretty sure Stephen agrees with me on this premise, so we can move on. Thus, conclusion, all is mind. If all is mind, this correlates with the two previous arguments that there is a governing mind that brings us contingent minds into existence to experience and operate in reality. I could present several other arguments for God's existence on top of these. So if Stephen thinks God probably doesn't exist, he has to tear down these arguments and offer a more probable explanation. Not just another possible explanation, but something more probable and parsimonious. When it comes to the origin of the universe and its emergent features, the existence of consciousness and basic philosophy, one can easily see a theistic hypothesis can explain all this data with one theory. There is a mind behind the universe that we call God. What I've seen in the past from atheists and Stephen like himself is they essentially throw out a bunch of possibilities to counter these arguments from theists, which really is not an argument for that a non-theistic explanation is more probable. But if he does this tonight, that would also make the non-theistic worldview less parsimonious, because I suspect he will have a different explanation for consciousness or emergent space-time, et cetera. Whereas I can explain all these anomalies with one argument, a theistic worldview. So that makes my argument, I would say, more parsimonious. Last and finally, many atheists reply by just appealing to logical positivism or scientism and saying there's no empirical or physical observations of God, so we cannot posit God. But this is a self-defeating position because it's a philosophical presupposition that there's no testable or empirical evidence to prove it, so it's self-defeating. So in conclusion, given the data, the best inference is there is a mind behind the universe we call God. Theism is more parsimonious, more plausible, and more probable given the evidence I went over, and I'll conclude there.
Thank you very much, Michael. We will switch back over to the dialogue boxes. And with that, this is again up to the debaters in terms of how much or how little they want to use. Mm-hmm. Destiny has a full 12 minutes available. And so,
what is after the 12 minute thing, is the next phase the back and forth or whatever?
Well, it's up to, if you guys would like to change it, I'm open to it because Mike said he's kind of flexible on it, where it could either be 8 minute rebuttals, or if you guys want to just kind of dissolve that time into the open discussion, we could do that too.
Yeah, I'd rather just open discuss and run down these syllogisms, I guess, one at a time would be interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, can we go back to the digital physics argument? Can you bring that up again?
I can put the slide up here. You want the syllogism?
Sure.
All right, let me find that here. All right, let me share my screen again. Okay, there you go.
Okay, let's run these premises down one at a time. So simulations can only exist in a computer or in a mind. Why does this have to be true?
Okay, can you offer another possibility that, because if it's a false dichotomy, you need to offer another one that where a simulation could exist.
A simulation could arise naturally in nature.
How so? Do you have any examples of something arising naturally in nature that's a simulation?
A parrot mimics speech of humans is a type of simulation, or...
Well, that seems to be just broadening the definition of simulation. I'm talking in terms of like holographic principle ideas, the idea that information, ontological information of reality is... sort of projected out, like, but it's still emerging from underlying information. I mean, a parrot mimicking is more just a mimic. If we want to broaden what a simulation means, sure, but that's not how I'm defining it.
Sure. Well, can you tell me exactly what you mean when you say simulation, then? Sorry, I said that one more
time. So a simulation would be kind of like what I was building on when I talked about the holographic principle. So it's basically this idea that there is a reality emergent from underlying information. So think of a hologram. When you see a hologram, there's not really a three-dimensional object there. It's really just some sort of information processing, causing lights to make it appear as though there's an object there. So it's basically this, basically in a nutshell, it's a three-dimensional reality emergent from underlying information. So it's not the physical matter itself that's there, it's just information that the appearance of physical matter appears to be there.
What's the difference between a simulation and an illusion?
Well, I mean, illusion
like, for instance, I'm curious, if I say something like a rainbow, does a rainbow count as a simulation or no?
Well, no, that'd be, illusion seems like it'd be a broader definition. I think that's, would probably also cover the parrot thing because, a parrot is making the illusion that a person is talking, but illusion just seems like a broader, appearance of something that could be there. I mean, if you want, I can get the actual definition of illusion.
Okay, that's fine. All right. Okay. I guess under those definitions, and I can probably accept simulations can only exist at a computer in a mind, I guess. Mm-hmm. For premise two, so why would we say the universe is a simulation? Because it's an emergent thing from underlying physical properties or?
Yeah, well, this is the Sean Carroll starts, space is obviously not fundamental. Mm-hmm. What we basically experience, space, time, matter, seems to not be fundamentally there when they weren't observers, or it's just not fundamentally there mm-hmm. in of itself. They are basically the result of information processing underneath. So that would basically imply the universe either is a simulation or basically acts very much like a simulation.
Would you say that in this case, would like consciousness be a simulation as well then?
Only if materialism is true, because consciousness, I guess you could say, is depending on the physicalist form within philosophy of mind you take, you could say consciousness is like an emergent property of the brain. Now, I don't obviously take that view, but
if would you say that like any physical object becomes an emergent thing then? So for instance, like I could argue that like forks don't exist in the universe. A fork is like an emergent thing that comes from underlying physical things. Like you could never discover like a fork like physically in the universe. It would only be
an emergent property. Here's the way I would word it a little differently than what you basically said. Uh-huh. So I would say the fork is really there. And I would use the analogy, I use this all the time. It's an analogy of a video game. If you find a fork in a video game, it's obviously a real fork in that game. It holds to the rules of that game, but it's not really made of like a concrete matter per se. It's just information processing to give you the appearance of a fork. So I would say when you find a fork in this reality, it's basically that. It's emergent from consciousness. It's emergent from the underlying information processing.
Yeah, I guess my problem, what I don't understand is it seems like we have this like huge link between emergent must be simulated. But that seems strange to me because it feels like we have a whole bunch of universal categories that we recognize, or even particular categories or particular things we recognize that are kind of like emergent from underlying physical things that don't exist in and of themselves. So for instance, like the categories of male or female, these are like emergent things that we would say they kind of exist, but they really don't. You can't find them anywhere, right? Like,
That seems to be like an epistemic category more than anything, not something ontologically, something that's be emergent.
When you say that the universe is ontologically emergent, how is the universe being an emergent property of like underlying quantum spooky stuff? How is that emergent in a different way than like a human is an emergent property of the underlying physical characteristics?
What do you mean underlying physical characteristics?
So, or like the underlying, so like, so like if you were to say like a human, like the existence of a human, like because we agree that space, time and everything is an emergent property, the space an emergent property. So would you also agree that like a human is like an emergent thing from like underlying physical things? The human itself doesn't exist, but it's rather like an emergent property of underlying physical things, or no?
Well, I would say every physical aspect of us, the brain, our bodies are emergent, but mm-hmm. I would not say our consciousness is emergent from the brain. I think consciousness is fundamental. So I would say you, the self-aware agent, is not emergent per se from the same way the physical is, but you interact in a physical reality. You have a physical avatar, so to speak.
Okay. So then, okay, I'm sorry. I have to wrap my head around this. Sorry, this is beyond me. So
no worries.
I'm trying to understand what is the difference between, so you say that the universe is emergent in that like space is not fundamental, right? It emerges out of like quantum stuff, essentially, right?
That's correct, yeah. Yes. Space-time, okay. Specifically.
And because it's an emergent thing, it therefore must be a simulation or type of simulation?
Well, I use simulation in this argument colloquially. So I'm using it because that's basically what we think of when we think of something that is emergent, like a simulation type thing. But I mean, I could simply just reword the argument to say that, you know, like,
I'm uncomfortable with simulation because simulation kind of implies purpose, which kind of helps premise one, right? Like when you say something is simulated, like it almost seems like there's like a purpose or intentionality behind it. I guess it doesn't necessarily have to be.
I would define simulation kind of like basically what the holographic principle just says, just something that is emergent. Emergent from underlying information processing. I don't think that necessarily implies purpose in and of itself. I'd have to argue that from other areas, of course.
Gotcha. Okay. And then why is it that, and then can you explain one more time? So I think I understand this. So why is it that like a human isn't emergent from underlying physical properties, like carbon atoms and bonds and all of that stuff? Why is a human not emergent in that way?
Well, I do think our bodies are, I wouldn't say consciousnesses. And this goes back to the argument I was going in the cosmic conscious argument. It's basically that there is no evidence that consciousness could emerge, and there's a lot of good evidence that would indicate consciousness is fundamental.
When you say fundamental, like more so than the physical properties of the brain, or?
Yeah, I would say consciousness is more fundamental than the physical properties of the brain.
Okay, that's a separate thing, so I'll write that down.
Yeah, and this goes back to what I was talking about in the third argument, but yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. Can you go back up to the PowerPoint? Sounds like a premise.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, sorry, I wanted to look at something else. Wrong thing. There you go.
A simulation on a computer still must be simulated in a mind. Your premise to support this was the idea that reality is like contingent on minds existing.
Well, there's two reasons I would argue this. For one, I think it would create an infinite regress, because if we're simulated on a computer, that computer obviously implies physical particles that put together the computer, which would also have the same, most likely would have the same underlying features of the same reality we have. So it'd have to be simulated on the computer, and then so on, so on, so on. Ultimately, though, from other pieces I gave, like the correlations in quantum cognition, as well as the work in the correlation between neural networks and galaxies, that it's more likely that we're simulated via a mind. And that also ends the chain. It's like first cause type argument.
Wait, so what are the similarities between neural networks and galaxies? How does that work? What do you mean by that?
Okay, so for example, they talk about, you know, in information processing, the ratio of information processing in their studies, they show that it's basically about the same via ratio. Same with power spectrum analysis, total neuron to observable galaxies. And what they're basically arguing is they're basically like the way a neural network works in the brain is kind of very similar to how the cosmic web of all the galaxies seem to operate. And so this is why
when you say similar, though, like similar how? There's just a lot of information, or because I'm not aware of like galaxies processing information in the way that neural networks do. I know that there might be like a lot of stuff moving around, but I don't understand like what problems do they solve or what
things do they compute. We can't, you know, show that the galaxy really is, you know, like a giant brain per se, but they're looking at just specific features of like processing power analysis. So there is information in terms of like the physics that goes on through there, you know, mm-hmm. So like, you know, that kind of information is what they're referring to when it comes to the cosmic web of galaxies. They're not talking about mental properties here. Like you and I can, you know, do the act of knowing. They're not claiming that galaxies have the act of knowing. So there's a little bit difference in there with refer to information processing.
I guess that like this seems like a pointless or an arbitrary like comparison. And like, it feels like I could make a similar argument that like any sort of like interaction between two things broken down enough could resemble that of a neural network. So like an ant colony, if I break down all the different neural links inside their brains and everything, well, these represent a neural network. Like, what is the significance of saying like a galaxy can represent a neural network just because a lot of, I guess, physics takes place or information is happening?
They're talking about the information taking place. Now, there have been people who've said that, you know, ants actually do kind of work like a brain as well, and how they operate. So what they're doing is they're not saying this proves a galaxy is a giant brain. I'm not saying that either. What I'm saying, though, is that if you're going to have something emerge from a mind, it's going to resemble that of a brain, like on the idealist view. Because an idealist says basically that the brain emerges from the mind. I'd have to explain a little bit more in detail. I understand that, but that's getting that from. Now, going back to the ant colony, I think that only helps my case because technically an ant colony does emerge from brain power. I mean, ants have brain power and they're working, and they're creating this network. So it'd be the same kind of thing, is that, you know, they sort of create this interesting this interesting web of working together, like, you know, brain kind of does as well. So the same thing we would see with what they're arguing is the same kind of information processing, power spectrum analysis also works when you look at the cosmic web of galaxies.
Okay, so what is the purpose of saying that like the galaxy or the universe or whatever resembles like a neural network then, if it's not purposeful? Is it just to say that there's so much information available that it must be emergent from a mind because there's so much information available, or what is the purpose of that?
No, I'm not saying there's so much information, therefore it has to be a mind. I'm saying that there are correlations and resemblance. So the way that our brains and our minds sort of work together sort of resembles very much what we see in the cosmic web of galaxies. We're not saying that, well, we can't explain all this information processing, therefore it has to be a mind. What we're saying is that if the universe was emergent from a mind, we would expect these type of correlations to show up, like total neuron, total observable galaxies, the same power spectrum analysis, that type of stuff. And so
can you, real quick, just because I don't know, can you explain what is power spectrum analysis? What does that mean?
Let me get up the exact definition from their paper, because I don't want to misrepresent them. If you want to give me a second.
Sure.
But one thing I do want to note is, again, this is secondary, as I said in my opening thing. The main thing I was looking for was the correlations to quantum cognition, because I think that's a far more stronger argument. And I wouldn't use this if the correlation to quantum cognition were there. This is just sort of secondary.
Okay.
So let me pull this up really quick. And then I will get you the exact quote from this article they wrote. And then they also, in this, they also cite different papers about other people who have sort of made this way. So what they say is researchers regularly use a technique called power spectrum analysis to study large-scale distribution of galaxies. The power spectrum of an image measures the strength of structural fluctuations belonging to a specific spatial scale. In other words, it tells us how many high-frequency and low-frequency notes make the peculiar spatial melody of each image.
Okay, so it looks like it basically has to do with how information is, I guess, like clustered around certain nodes, kind of. And then
I believe that's what they're getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Okay. I guess I don't know because I don't have like this level of scientific knowledge, but I feel like I could probably find like a lot of other things in nature that kind of resemble these structures. It basically just has to do with how information is clustered in a galaxy or in a brain. These things happen to look pretty similar, but I just don't know if that says anything profound.
Well, I would use that type of arguments as well, because again, like for example, the ant colony that emerges from, you know, living creatures that all obviously have brains. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that, I mean, I guess you have to find something purely natural, like rocks or something that was doing that. It might throw some dents in it, I guess you could say. But ultimately, though, the idealist, you know, is going to argue that the universe is emergent from consciousness anyway. But again, as I said, this article they wrote is secondary. My main argument was what I gave prior with the whole principle, the correlation to quantum cognition. I could throw this out and I could still make the argument is what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha. All right. And then what's the next premise?
Okay. Next premise. So simulation on a computer must also be simulated in a mind, as I was arguing. Therefore, the universe is a simulation in a mind. Printify this mind is what we call God. And I want to make sure I clarify this for your audience. I always say this is just God is just a title for what I'm arguing for. You know, there's a mind behind the universe, we call it God. There's a mind behind moral realism, we call it God. These are the arguments I always give. And so, but I mean, it fits the same description if you read someone like Thomas Aquinas or St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm. So God here could literally be like the Matrix or some other type of brain in a vat simulation, right? Theoretically.
If you want to say a giant brain, sure. I mean, it probably still fit the argument. I would just say it's unnecessary because, you know, just go with a mind.
Sure. Okay. So let me try to summarize all this in a simple way. And then you can tell me if this is missing the point, sure. Or you can do a summary yourself. So it sounds like we've identified that the universe itself, or what we perceive to be the universe, is not fundamental. That it is rather an emergent thing from underlying properties, right?
Properties, information, one of the two.
Yeah. So it sounds like in order for things to be emergent or simulated, we would say that necessarily has to occur with a mind?
Ultimately, I think the philosophy does go back to that, yeah.
Okay.
Now, and obviously, that can't be scientifically proven, but it is a philosophical inference.
Sure. And then both of these two things together seems to necessitate the existence of some type of mind that we can call God for this purpose, right?
Yes.
Okay. Fuck. I don't think I have like the physics knowledge to like challenge these. I guess
that's okay.
So on a philosophical level, like the two questions I would ask are, why did the physicists that study this, why don't they reach the same conclusions that you have related to theism?
Sure, that's a great question, and I don't expect you to you know, I didn't really want this to be a total gotcha. I really just want to have a conversation about this and see if you can poke some holes in it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if you come back like 6 months later and we talk about it again, maybe you thought of something new, you know, that kind of stuff. But that's a great question. First, there are physicists, as I said, here's a slide, that do argue this. I rely a lot on people like Henry Stapp. Paul Davies became a deist because of information like this as well as other stuff like within fine tuning. So there are physicists. Now, why don't every physicist do this? I think it has to do with a lot of philosophy of science. So like when Einstein first came out with a lot of his theories,
Wait, hello?
Mike?
Oh, I got him. I got to go. See you later.
I'm back. Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay, let me stop sharing. Maybe that's somehow the thing. When Einstein first came up with the equations, you know, he rejected the philosophical implications, and it took people like Alexander Friedman and George Lemaitre to really, you know, hone in and say this is what this means. Same with a lot of stuff that goes on in I remember Stephen Barr cited a survey done in the 1950s that 2/3 of scientists, cosmologists specifically, still rejected the Big Bang even after Edwin Hubble made his discoveries. And so, you know, I mean, there's a great book called For and Against Method by Emery Lakatos and Paul Feyerbend. They're two philosophers of science. And one of the things they note is in philosophy of science, it's really not as we think it is. Like someone makes a new discovery, everyone changes their mind. Because sometimes discoveries correlate with numerous theories. So they note that really in philosophy of science, there are degenerative research programs and progressive research programs. And over time, degenerative research programs go away. So for example, take evolutionary biology. Right now, The modern statistics, neo-Darwinism, is sort of kind of a degenerate program. What it's not anything wrong with it. It's just incomplete. So a lot of biologists are now offering extended evolutionary synthesis, and they're progressive research programs. They're taking neo-Darwinism and they're adding to it, saying there's other mechanisms in evolution we can look at, like, you know, natural genetic engineering, evo-devo research, stress-induced mutations, these types of things. So when a physicist, you know, comes and says, you know, I don't agree the same conclusions, well, it's because there was different research programs at work. And ultimately, though, you know, we have to look at the evidence and try to find which research program is actually the best and the most effective in sort of explaining the data. And that's all I'm doing here. I'm saying this is the most parsimonious, most plausible, most probable.
Is there ever a worry that we're playing like a very advanced version of like God of the Gaps, that at some point we do discover like a fundamental like nature of the universe, that maybe like string theory is real, and we kind of like can fundamentally understand that the universe isn't like emergent in an unknown way, but every part of the every part of space time or whatever can be traced back to, you know, particular vibrating strings or something? Would that threaten this theory at all?
No, because I actually I've seen a lot of people argue via string theory that this could also imply a mind as well. So Miki Okaku has hinted at that as well, that this wouldn't be a problem for theism. Mm-hmm. If that information happens, I'm willing to change. I hope I would. I mean, obviously, I watched your talk with Sean Carroll today. I thought it was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk about, you know, like we're not purely logical creatures like we pretend to be.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, it's kind of hard. So I would hope that I would be able to help look at the data and change my view. So I'm currently changing my views on some things in anthropology right now. I've changed my views on some things with regards to biblical studies as well. I was not an idealist when I started my channel. So I'd be hopefully willing to update my views as that happens. But as of now, I think this is the evidence is where it's pointing to. And unless there's new evidence that comes along or a better explanation, you know, I don't see any reason to not hold to the theory, just like we would hold any scientific theory today.
Gotcha. I'm kind of curious. Earlier you mentioned about the brain emerges from the mind. What do you mean by that? Can you explain that?
Sure. So I'm an idealist. So let me just kind of explain that a little bit. Mm-hmm. So a materialist would say that there's just matter. Mm-hmm. Substance dualist says there's mind and matter and there's interaction. An idealist says there's mind and matter is emergent from mind. So that's kind of how what I take, because I'm an idealist. I say that, you know, that what we see, the material world, is sort of an emergent from mind in that speak. So it's Donald Hoffman, a cognitive scientist, argues that basically the brain is a dumbed down user interface symbol of a person operating in physical reality. This is the manifestation of the software agent. It's just a physical manifestation in that sense.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the way that you define God here, so I'm curious, this isn't really related to this. Do you have a particular brand of theism or no? Like, are you a Christian?
I am a Christian, yeah. But I'm just, you know, I am a theistic evolutionist. I'm also a partial preterist, if anyone knows what that means. So I am a Christian theist, yeah.
Using this particular argument for the existence of a God, and then let's say that we don't go down any particular theist route, are there any implications whatsoever to these ideas, or?
Well, sure. I think it provides illumination on a lot of things. I think it, how do I word this?
What's one thing that we might view differently as a result of having this type of underlying belief that the universe is emergent from a mind or something?
Well, I think it could imply, now I don't say this could prove, but it could imply that we have a little bit more of a special place. Maybe that's not the wrong terminology, but more of a unique position. Life has a more unique position, and that consciousness is not just the result of just, you know, a happy accident via the brain, that we really are self-aware mm-hmm. agents that may have implications for free will. There, I just posted a blog post written by a contributor to my ministry on free will, defending it. So I think it might imply free will. It might imply consciousness. It might imply real agents. I would argue from other arguments based on similar data, this could imply life after death, that type of stuff. So there could be other implications, but I need to present more data, obviously.
Gotcha. Obviously you agree with this. I don't know if it's possible to reject the existence of a quote unquote God given these set of premises. I don't think so, or at least I don't have the ability to. But I'm curious if, because right now in your argument, we've established, assuming everything is true thus far, we've established that the universe is likely to be some sort of simulation. But that doesn't get us into any sort of like God area yet, like in a traditional sense. So for instance, let's say I want to believe that life has a purpose, or that, you know, we have free will or something. Like, it seems like we're pretty far from that, or we haven't made any progress towards that in establishing the argument we have so far. You think you can get to things like, I'm curious, so you think you can get to things like free will from this argument?
No. I present an argument specifically for God's existence. I would need to present more data. I have a series called Case for the Soul that I'm going to probably update soon, because there's a lot more data I want to add. Again, it was just posted on my blog, an article defending free will and arguments presented to defend free will on there. So I would argue via starting basically from the idea that we are conscious software agents that are irreducible from that. And then I would argue for free will building on that.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't think I could refute this argument, or at least not now. If we define God as meaning, if we understand that our definition of God here includes anything from a theistic Christian loving God to where a brain in a vat that's the universe is being simulated for, this argument can equally prove so far either of those two things. I don't think I would reject either of those possibilities. Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm only arguing for just basic theism, as I said in the beginning, because I'm a classical apologist. And a classical apologist is not a presuppositional apologist. I know you've had to deal with those people before.
Yeah.
But a classical apologist, we argue first for a just God, general just God. And then if we can establish deism, then we argue specifically for Christianity, building on things like resurrection argument, New Testament reliability, Old Testament archaeology, Old Testament reliability, which I'm currently working on right now. I would just say these arguments obviously just show generally a theistic worldview.
Gotcha. Okay.
And again, it's fine if you don't have anything else to say. I don't want this to be a gotcha. I just want to share the information. Maybe think about it. Maybe we could have another conversation someday about it. I respect that, instead of just like the last guy I debated on this, just yelling, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong.
Yeah. I think, it's more philosophy than science at this point for me to try to refute. I think the thing I have the biggest problem with is the idea that emergent properties like necessarily simulated, but I would have to formalize this. It would take me a while.
Simulation in the argument is just a title. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm more focusing on the emergent idea. I just use simulation because I think that kind of captures what people think of. I mean, it obviously isn't a traditional simulation like you and I are going to make if we were to make a computer game or something.
Sure. I think just based on what you've said so far, I don't think it doesn't seem like you function in bad faith. That's the impression that I have. I do have a little bit of an issue using words like simulation or God. This is like very maybe pedantic, but they do seem to imply some sort of intent, which kind of like weights it towards like a Christian argument later, if that's where you decide to go. I don't think that I would necessarily disagree with any of the arguments laid out so far, but I would be uncomfortable using the term simulation or God, because there's like a heavy intentionality behind those things. Yeah.
That's
but,
fine.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Yeah. That doesn't bother me at all.
Okay. Okay. Well, where do we go from here?
Q&A maybe.
Definitely do Q&A. So with that, thank you very much, everybody, for your questions. I forgot to mention at the start, sorry, super, as you know, I'm excited. If you have a question, you can fire it into the live chat. Also, if you have a super chat, gives you a chance to make a comment toward one of the speakers that they would get the chance to respond to, and it'll also put your question at the top of the list during the Q&A. So with that, thank you very much for your questions. I told you these guys are just authentic. I really appreciate you guys a lot. So, as I mentioned before, both of them are linked in the description. And with that, Steven Steen's our local benevolent troll. Thanks for your super chat. He says, I leave my wife just for a hug from James. Thanks, Steven. Steven Steen says, if IP wins, atheists have to destroy their fedoras. That's very sweet, Steven. Wikey, thanks for your super chat. He says, Wikey9 says, hey, IP, why do you think the physicists that you cite are unable to draw? I know this is a little bit, if you want to add to it, Mike, you could. I know that Destiny brought this up, at least if this question is going where I think it is. If you want to say, I already kind of covered it, you can. Why do you think the physicists that you cite are unable to draw out all of the conclusions from their research that you are able to draw?
I don't know. I can't psychoanalyze everyone. Can't get inside their thoughts. But I mean, like, it's, you know, sometimes
go ahead. A really good answer that he gave earlier to that is that a lot, it's, oh man, I'm making a big generalization here, but a lot of like hard science people don't really care much about philosophy. That seems to be the case. So it's entirely possible that something under the investigations of physics lead you to some profound philosophical idea that you just don't know about or understand or care about because you're a physicist. So yeah, it's entirely possible that somebody doing investigations into physics might uncover things that could inform philosophy, but either wouldn't know about it or wouldn't care about it because that's not their area of research.
Right. And if you actually look at a lot of the research in quantum mechanics, the book called The Quantum Enigma, written by two physicists, they note that when a lot of the evidence came out, a lot of physicists just sort of ignored the philosophy of it. Didn't talk about like many worlds interpretation versus orthodox or versus Bohmian. They just liked the Copenhagen because it was pragmatic. It was useful. It worked. Let's move on. I don't really care what that means.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks so much. And Steven Steen, a troll, says, atheists pronounce GIF with a hard G. So we appreciate that. Is it, what is the right way to say it? I feel like I don't know how to say it. It is, because a hard G would be, is that, that's like GIF the peanut butter, right?
Okay. I don't know. It's stupid hard.
Steven, okay, so one question for Steven. I can't pronounce your name, forgive me, it's in another language. But we appreciate your super chat. They ask, do you suspend judgment? Do you suspend judgment on God's existence or believe that no God exists? If either, what are your reasons for either?
If you, can you say that one more time?
You bet. They said, do you suspend judgment on God's existence or believe that no God, namely the proposition that no God exists? If either, and I think he's saying, whatever the case, what are your reasons for taking that?
Oh, my. So I'm a materialist. So my position on God creatures or whatever has always been that if they do exist, we can't have information about them, that that information would be inaccessible for humans. It has been my position. So,
gotcha. Thanks very much. Sigifredo Sarabia, thanks so much for your question. Glad to see you. IP, where is mind between ages? Sometimes these are a little bit challenging. Let's see. Sigifredo is a deep thinking person. They say, where is mind between ages 1 to 3 years of no recollection or after a brain injury? If the answer is waiting for the brain to mature or that damage caused the person to, quote, not be the same, unquote, wouldn't matter produce mind?
Okay, that's a great question. So one other thing I would make a distinction here is between mind and soul. Now, for the soul is a word that gets defined in many different ways, but for the purposes of this conversation, we can define a soul a little differently than a mind. So the mind is a self-aware agent, you know, conscious being. The soul, you could say, is your personality, your thoughts, your dreams, your hopes, your goals. And that evolves and changes over time. I mean, your personality will be different tomorrow because new information was added to your memory. So souls do evolve over time. This is why some theologians talk about this as being a soul-building theodicy, that we are put here to build souls. So that's, in theology, that's how soul tends to be defined. I've in the past defined it as mind as well, but, you know, it's one of those, you know, terms that gets thrown around a lot. So I would say that what's not evolving is the conscious agent. It's always been there. What's evolving is the personality or their soul, so to speak, as they sort of age. And so, and the other thing about memory is just because you don't remember things, you know, that doesn't mean you weren't conscious at the time. I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. I don't remember everything I dreamt last night. But we do have actually studies that show that consciousness is still present in some of these patients, even when they're under general anesthesia. And I can always link those if people ask me for them. So we need to distinguish between maybe the conscious agent, the self-aware agent, and the information contingent on the agent, so the soul. So I would say the soul obviously evolves and changes over time. The mind does not. The mind is this conscious, self-aware agent.
Gotcha. Thanks very much. And next up, Carmel Crump. Good to see ya. She's got a question for IP. She says, what do you think of recent studies trying to prove consciousness is from the brain?
Oh, well, there hasn't been really good data when I was looking at some of those. So a lot of them are just looking for correlations. The problem is, you know, even as someone, I believe it was Daniel Dennett, but I could be wrong on that, but there's just no area of the brain that really does this. So he's trying to argue for like some sort of like global sort of thing of the brain that sort of somehow makes consciousness. It's very hard for them to try to do these types of things. What they're kind of finding is correlation. And even when they do, you know, shut down parts of the brain, there have been other studies that have come and said, well, no, there's still consciousness present here. And it's, you know, other way. And I would also bet on, you know, people like, you know, Donald Hoffman, where, you know, it talks about what we're basically seeing here is correlations. You know, this is the brain is like the user interface symbol for the conscious agent in reality. So, of course, if you, do something to the brain, you're going to affect how the conscious agent is acting or working in the brain, or acting and working in physical reality, because that's the window into it. So I would build on other, thinkers like that as well, researchers.
Gotcha. Thank you very much. And Nathan Orman, forgive me, I'm jumping ahead. I want to get this one first, Our Father in the Green, thanks for your super chat. They said, ethics would be a good way to with Destiny. Saw Adam Friended and Destiny's stream on morality recently. Really enjoyed it.
I just watched that too. It was good. I was considering using the moral argument tonight, but Steven doesn't believe in objective morality or moral realism. So I would have to argue for that first and then the moral argument. And I just was like, well, save time. I'll just do some other arguments.
Gotcha. Excellent. And next up, King Yassine, if I'm pronouncing it right, let me know if I'm not. They asked for IP, if AI advances to the point of consciousness, in parentheses, which I think is possible thanks to neural networks where virtual agents learn new things by themselves, would that disprove the existence of God?
Well, it'd be kind of hard to show to begin with, but if you could, it wouldn't disprove the existence of God, because I could still use digital physics argument or the introspective argument. It would have make challenges for the cosmic conscious argument already, because you would show that you could create consciousness through, creating an AI type thing. You also need to remember, though, there's an argument given by John Sear called the Chinese Room argument, or Chinese Box argument. I forget what its official title is, but I talk about it in my second video on the Case for the Soul series, refuting physicalist objections. If you want me to explain it now, I can, but to save time, I can move on.
Gotcha. We come back to it if they have a follow-up question.
But you can see it's in the video already, so you can see that.
I am jumping through some of these questions just to try to get an alternating kind of Q&A where we'll give some questions to Steven as well. Steven, question from Eric Bierthaler. Thanks for your question, Eric. He says, What would convince Steven that God is real?
My general problems is that I would really like to see something happen in reality that is unexplained by the current scientific observations we have now that would require some either supernatural explanation. I don't know if I'd say metaphysical, but some sort of extra physical explanation in order to get there. I'm generally not as excited about fundamental nature of existence arguments that go way, way, way back to in order for us to even perceive anything, a God must exist. Mainly because I find these arguments to be either, I don't want to say unverifiable, but the claims they make are either so broad, we could be Brandon of that, or it could be the Christian God, or they're uninteresting and that they have no implication into the real world. So for instance, I could just easily believe all of these claims and it doesn't change anything about any of my beliefs or views of literally anything. The original question was, what would it take to convince me of a God? Being able to show some scientific result over and over again, that's this is unexplainable using, materialist understandings. You need a God to explain this. You need some sort of supernatural thing to explain it. I think that would really start to push me in that direction, I think.
Gotcha. Thanks very much. Next up, anybody said I missed your question, forgive me. I'm working on it. I think we're moving down the list well. And question for IP, Nathan Orman, thanks for your question. He said, IP, do you argue from perception for idealism?
It's part of, so perceptions, for example, what we perceive, I would argue that can be reduced to information processing. So take David Hume's bundle theory. So David Hume says, if you look at a physical object, you can describe it all by its properties. You take an apple, it's color green, it's got the shape of an apple, it's this level hard. All of that is described via properties. If you take all the properties away, do you have a physical object there? Well, he says, no, you can't even think of such a thing. So basically, I take that one step further, and I would say that all the physical things we see physical can be described via information. We can describe all its properties. It's basically mental experiences like qualia, taste, smell, sounds. So it's likely that that's all it is. Why would we posit another substance beyond mind when can all be explained via idealism.
Gotcha. Thanks very much. I did miss a couple of super chats. Sorry about that, friends. Our Father in the Green, he asked a question earlier. The question that I mentioned earlier was actually his kind of part B to this original question he said. He said his original question was more, focused on would both Destiny and IP, or Mike Jones, ever have a stream with the English philosopher Gary Edwards, especially with Destiny on, quote, scientism?
I won't, because he tried to do a video response one time and was incredibly rude, dishonest, and there's no, I don't want to have a conversation with anyone like that. I look at these as like a courtesy I would do with people I respect. I respect Steven, so I would love to have conversations with him, but I don't have conversations with people that get rude and insulting.
Gotcha. Steven, are you familiar with, I think that was the one in which they were saying that Steven, ethics with that gentleman would be good too with you, Destiny, if you happen to know the gentleman.
This is related to scientism?
Yeah, I'm kind of piecing it together myself. It says, would Destiny have a stream with the English philosopher Gary Edwards? And they're asking yes about, especially with Destiny on scientism or ethics.
He's an actual philosopher guy that does scientism?
I'm not sure.
I've looked at scientism, seems like that seems like the big meme where you say, like, I don't know. Scientism is really stupid to me. But maybe someday I'll talk to him about it. I don't know. Gotcha. Scientism is basically like, I've studied physics so fucking hard, I realize all of philosophy is pointless and I can see everything in, like, my telescope. Right? Like, I don't know. That I'm being, like, very, very rude in my characterization of it. But scientism seems, like, really dumb to me. Scientism always seemed to me like an idea where scientists were too lazy to do any philosophical homework. So they thought that they could just subsume all of philosophy through, like, observational data or whatever, which seems like absurd to me, because philosophy kind of has to come before science. But
for more on that, see Stephen's conversation with Sean Carroll.
Oh, sure. Wait, so Sean Carroll isn't a scientist, or he's not like a scientism guy, right?
No, he's not.
Yeah.
No, he's a
great.
Gotcha. Thank you very much. James Hope, thanks for your super chat. Says, and brain's got a boot. Thanks, duly noted. Canderman, thanks for your super chat. Says, both for both Stephen and IP, do minds think? And can thinking occur without time?
For the first one, yes. And for the second one, depends on what you mean by thinking. You mean processing information? No. I mean, because, you know, that would imply time and thoughts coming before one and the other.
Gotcha.
Am I supposed to answer that? I don't know if this goes a little beyond me. I don't know if I believe in time necessarily. Like, things happen. Things just happen, but in terms of like how we are specific demarcations, this is a second, this is a minute. I don't know if time exists actually in that fashion, or if humans have just like developed a system that we kind of impose on the world in order to keep track of events. If you say like, do we need time? Like, do we need events to happen one after another to process information? I mean, I would say yes necessarily, but I don't know if that means that I believe like in the concept of time. Like, I don't think there's like a specific demarcation of time like humans have imposed on the universe.
Gotcha. Next up, Apologetics. Thanks for your super chat. They ask, what do either of you think of the modal ontological argument?
I use it. I think it's valuable. I just, people need to recognize the limitations of it. It should show that existence of a maximally great being would be logical, but doesn't prove one exists in the real world. It should show that, well, you basically argue, given every logical construct of reality, one would have to contain a maximally great being, so it's logical to view their actual world that way as well.
Gotcha. Dennis VR, thanks for your... we'll come back to the other one. IP, do you want God to be real? They're asking like if it's up exactly what it says.
Motivated reasoning, yeah.
Right.
Everyone has motivated reasoning. I'm sure there's parts of me that wants God to be real, and there's parts of me that doesn't. I some days wake up and go, God, I just kind of wish I could be an atheist and not deal with this, and I could just go and play the stock market and not worry about this stuff. And some days I'm glad God exists. It depends. People are complicated. You just can't sum everything down to just one motivation. Are there motivations at play in everybody? Yeah. I obviously have them. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm completely unbiased. But, it depends on the person. I just remind myself of Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is wicked and deceitful above all things. Who can understand it?
Gotcha. King, let's see about that one. Epic Christ, thanks for your question. They ask, IP, aren't you a transcendental idealist?
I don't ever define myself that way. I call myself a dual aspect idealist. I don't know what they mean by trans, but what that actually means, though, because I never use that term to describe myself.
You betcha. And then I'm going to try to read, try to find if we have enough questions where we can go back, both Steven and IP. We'll keep going with the Q&A. Otherwise, I'm kind of coming out short, and I don't want to only have questions for IP. So, we see. What do both speakers, True Gamer 69, thanks for your question. They ask, what do both speakers think about the about atheistic moral realism?
I mean, well, there are ways to have more realism as an atheist. I don't know. I mean, like, there's a lot of different, like, moral realist ideas that don't require God. That's pretty broad. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I think moral realism is metaethics. When you when you make a moral argument, you enter into moral ontology. There are different areas. So you can be a moral realist and be an atheist or a theist. It depends on how you ground morality, I guess you could say. How are you grounding moral facts? I love when I meet an atheist who's a moral realist, because then we can we at least agree on something. You know, people like to find people you agree stuff on. So I don't know. I like them. I did a collaboration video with atheistic moral realists on critiquing error theory one time.
Gotcha. Maybe just a few more. We have a question for Destiny from I'm Gay as Heck. Well, thanks for your question. As there are plenty of mysteries that currently cannot be explained by science, such as what dark energy is, wouldn't that mean you have to believe in God according to you?
There's a difference between saying we don't have an explanation for something versus in order to explain something, it requires or necessitates like some supernatural entity. Just because we don't understand how something works doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it has to be a greater power to do it. Like, there have been plenty of things in the past history of humanity that we don't know how they work, and then we've discovered how they work, and it hasn't required like a supernatural power to explain them. And I would expect that trend to continue, although maybe it won't. But
gotcha. Sigifredo Sarabia, thank you for your super chat. Just flew in. This is interesting. Both obligated to stop suffering. I think they're saying, like, if you both believe that we are obligated to stop suffering, why not be vegans?
Well, I mean, I think you have to show. So actually, I would refer people, surprisingly, to a video when someone named Vegan Gaines called into The Atheist Experience and talked to Matt Dillahunty about this. And I thought Matt Dillahunty gave some pretty good answers to that. We're not morally, I don't think we're morally obligated to stop eating animals. I don't think we have an obligation to be vegans. And I think, surprisingly, I found myself agreeing with Matt in that back and forth they had. I thought he gave some pretty good answers there.
Gotcha. And Steven, you've crossed, I remember I've seen a debate where you've crossed swords with Vegan Gaines before.
Yeah, I don't believe we have like an obligation to reduce all suffering. That's not like something that I believe in.
Betcha. Next, we'll probably have this be the last one just because we are a lot for IP. Don't get me wrong, folks. You can find both of the speakers in the description if you want to shoot them an email or a tweet. But last one from Nathan Ormond. Thanks. This is for both. Nathan asks, who was Jesus of Nazareth?
A guy that may or may not, I think he existed, probably. Fancied himself to be like a prophet or something. That, I mean, I'm not religious, so obviously I don't believe he had any supernatural anything. So,
I mean, I'm convinced that Jesus was a real human that existed, but was also the incarnation of God himself. So it was the Son of God. I'm not Christian, so of course.
Thank you, gentlemen. One more, because it just came in, and it is for both of you. And I love this question. What are both of your thoughts on fine-tuning arguments for God's existence?
I'm okay with it. I think it's a good probabilistic argument. You just have to recognize what it is. You're arguing probability, and you have to obviously deal with the other possibilities like physical necessity or chance to argue that basically it's design. And best you can say from it is that there's a designer. But again, you can't really say who or what. It's a simple natural theology argument. I would use it secondarily with the contingency argument.
Gotcha.
I don't like the fine-tuning argument because I feel like it supposes the universe can only exist the way that it does now. It's hard to conceive of a universe that could exist in a different way. But the fine-tuning argument argues that, like, or my understanding of it is basically that, like, life can only exist if certain conditions are, like, set to pretty exact, you know, specifications. But the reality is that maybe it could have been set far differently and another type of life or another type of world could have emerged that we just can't really think of right now. So, I don't know.
Thank you very much. With that, I want to say thanks for being everybody. Being here, everybody, has been a blast. Thanks for your questions. And also want to let you know, as mentioned, both of the speakers have a link in the description. So one last final thanks to the speakers who made this possible today. It's a lot of fun, a great conversation. And maybe in the future, it'd be fun to have both of you guys back. We'd really enjoyed having you guys on. You guys have helped us out a lot in terms of the channel growing, new people being introduced to it, and more importantly, just the conversation, just getting your guys' creative thoughts. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks.
You bet. With that, take care, everybody. Keep sifting out the reasonable from the unreasonable.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.